just being.
Call the House Judiciary Committee to order February 22nd. Got three bills, shouldn't take us too long. Mr. Taylor, 1555, we had that the other day.
No, this is, it's up for hearing. That's the.
Mr. Chair, members of committees, Senate Bill 1555 comes to you from Senator Verger, requires school employees to report acts of harassment and intimidation, bullying, and cyberbullying, and allows remedial action for failure to report, requires policy prohibiting such acts to allow students and volunteers to make reports voluntarily and anonymously.
Any senators?
Senator Verger, I bet you've never been bullied.
You know, actually, I never have. Interesting that you'd say that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is really a pleasure to be here this morning. I am Joanne Verger. I serve the Senate District 5 on the beautiful Oregon coast. I'm here to talk a little bit about Senate Bill 1555. You have my testimony in front of you. You also have a copy of the bill. So what I'd like to do, because I want you to hear some very compelling testimony from some young people who are here today, and Senator Atkinson is also joining me, who has been a strong supporter of this bill. The bill had great hearings in the Senate, came out of committee unanimously and off the floor of the Senate unanimously. Bullying is a very, very serious subject, particularly with the young people that are here today to talk with you. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Senator Atkinson. And following that, we have a wonderful young woman who has agreed to come and tell her story to you. She is 15 years old. Her name is Madeline, and she will introduce herself when the time comes. Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jason Atkinson. I represent Senate District 2, a good portion of Southern Oregon. When I began in public life, I thought I knew exactly which issues I was interested in and particularly good at, and now, all these years later, I find myself in a completely different place than I started, interested in issues such as this, interested in premature births of babies and mental health issues, things that I never would have been thought when I started I would be involved with. This issue actually found me through a variety of circumstances in Southern Oregon, and I have now been on the board of a national organization called the Protectors, which is really fantastic if you see it. The Protectors testified earlier. Their president testified on a different version of this bill last session. But what the Protectors does is it trains through a series of curriculums kids not to be bystanders, but to be what we call sidestanders, which is to stand up to bullying. What we found, and the term that is used, at least in that community, is bully side, bullying that leads to the point of someone taking their own life for a variety of just absolute terrible things. Today, bullying can take several different forms. It can take verbal, but now, and I think as this bill addresses eloquently, it can take the form of cyberbullying, which is on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's interesting that all of us in public life, to a certain degree, we sign up for cyberbullying because we're in a partisan environment and we're used to people saying terrible things about us in blogs. Whether it's true or not is something that we in public life learn to grow a thick skin over. The problem with that is when we're talking about young people, fourth and fifth grade, all the way up to people who are juniors and seniors in high school, they did not sign up for that. They did not sign up for the type of bullying that is easily accessible today, that is downright evil. And not without going into too much time, you all know of the recent reports. It seems about every few weeks we hear of another bully side somewhere in the United States. And so I lay that and perhaps frame the argument to you in a way that is a little bit unusual, but I do strongly support this bill and the good senator from Coos Bay.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Madeline Klingel. I am 15 years old and a freshman at Lake Ridge High School in Lake Oswego, Oregon. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 1555. I support this bill because I am a victim of bullying. First, I would like to briefly tell you about my experience with bullying. Some rumors were started about me at the beginning of my eighth grade year. These rumors gave others an excuse to bully me. At school, I was talked about, made fun of, and shunned. There was one girl in particular that was out to get me for reasons unknown. She made my life a living hell. She called me names in the hallways and got me uninvited from my own friends' parties. If I sat down at a table where she and her friends were also sitting, they would all stand up and leave. She was relentless. I was also bullied on social networking sites such as Formspring and Facebook. Formspring is a social question and answer website that allows its users to ask other people questions anonymously by clicking the anonymous button. The problem with websites like Formspring is that they have opened the door for harassment and bullying due to the anonymity of the entries. I had a Formspring account, and I received hundreds of cruel anonymous messages. I would like to share with you just a small sampling of the comments that were sent to me on Formspring. I like lowering your self-esteem. You have no right to live. I hope you kill yourself and go to hell. It's what you deserve. I'm going to hide behind the anonymous button because I hate you. You're the most hated person at our school. God, you're a freak. You're a loser that no one likes. And those were some of the milder comments made to me. I missed most of the second half of my eighth grade year because I was too scared to go to school. I became depressed and anxious. Instead of going to school, I stayed home and slept the days away. It was my escape from reality. It got so bad that my counselor from school and principal came to my house every morning to make sure that I was awake, and then they'd take me to school. I began to believe that I was just as bad as the bullies said I was. I felt misunderstood, helpless, and worthless. My grades went from straight A's to straight F's. As a result of the bullying, I tried to commit suicide. I didn't go anywhere for several months, and I lost touch with my friends and family. I had to go to counseling and be put on medication to help with my depression and anxiety. On the few days that I did go to school, I would sit down with my Spanish teacher and tell him everything because I trusted him. Although he knew about my daily struggles with bullying, he never reported it. If the bill's changes had been in effect as of last year, he would have been required to tell the appointed school official, and the appointed official would have had to put the adopted policy into action. My mom also told the principal what was going on. The principal admitted that she didn't really know what to do because the school didn't have a policy in place. The principal had a talk with the main bully that I had mentioned earlier. The bullying only got worse because she was mad at me for telling on her. Again, the principal had another talk with the girl and also called the girl's mom. This happened 3 or 4 times. On top of that, my mom also hired a private investigator because the principal wasn't as affected as we had hoped. Again, if Bill 1555 would have been in effect last year, the bullying would have stopped after the first meeting with the bully, and there would have been consequences for her retaliation. If the bill's changes had been in effect then, and the school had a strong policy, I believe that the bullying would have ended much sooner. I can't get my eighth grade year back, but you have the power to stop this from happening to other kids. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and I will now answer any questions that you have.
Mr. Chairman, I want to compliment Madeline. She was unable to get through her testimony before the Senate committee, and she was very eager to come back today and to be able to do this. This takes great courage to do this, and so I want to compliment her and thank her very much. She did a great job today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madeline, thank you so much for coming today, and thank you for having the strength to tell us about this in front of a group of strangers. So, Madeline, how has all this worked out? Now, are you still at the same school? Are you in a different school? Could you tell us what the present condition is like for you?
Representative Tomei, I'm at Lake Ridge High School now, and the junior high that I was at feeds into the high school, so I'm in the same district, and all the same people are there. I don't get bullied now, only because I think what happened was that I was put on medication, so I was a lot more stable, and I gained confidence in myself, and I started standing up for myself as long as other, as like, as well with other people. And so that's the only reason the bullying stopped. The faculty had nothing to do with it.
Okay. Thank you, Madeline. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any members?
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes.
Madeline, you are a brave young woman, and I applaud you. It takes a lot of guts. My daughter was also bullied in school and had the courage to speak directly with those who were bullying her. She also did not get a lot of help from the school. In fact, when we raised this issue, some of the teachers said, well, it probably just happens on the playground. This was elementary school, and we're not on duty out there, so it's not our responsibility. So thank you for bringing this to us. Senator Atkinson, I want to talk with you about the stand by the side of, because I think that's really the key, and I don't know that this bill can address that, but by standing up yourself and acknowledging this and encouraging not just students to stand with people who are being bullied, but for us to look around at ourselves as well and make sure that we are part of a culture and atmosphere that even in public life does not tolerate or perpetrate the kind of unrelated bullying. You know, if people want to argue with positions, that's fine. But I want to applaud you as well for being willing to stand up. And Senator Verger, thank you for letting us know that this is really important. This is about the atmosphere that our kids are in at school and whether they feel safe and comfortable and excited about going to school instead of fearful about it. Thank you.
I was invited to Lincoln High School, where students have been working on a program of anti-bullying and going into the freshman classes at their school, and they are becoming quite effective. And this program is has a good chance of going nationwide. Two of those students are here with us today. And so, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we will have the second panel come up. I have invited my policy advisor, who has worked so hard on the bill, to come up with them in recognition of his own work that he's done on this bill. Thank you so much for being so attentive.
Thank you. Ryan and Brian. I don't know who else you have. I don't have all the names down here.
Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Max Lehman, and I am one of the leadership and I am one of the leaders of the Lincoln High School anti-bullying campaign. Our address is 1600 Southwest Salmon Street, Portland, Oregon 97205. This is my friend Alexis Taylor, as well as she is also a Lincoln High School student leader. Lincoln students went to Salem in 2008 to campaign for Oregon's Stronger Anti-Bullying Bill. Since 2008, we have attempted to show that bullying is a problem not only at Lincoln, but in our city, our state, and our nation. As a class, we have taken steps to give students the knowledge and tools to fight bullying against people of different sexes, race, creeds, abilities, sexual orientations. We support Senate Bill 1555 and urge you to make it law.
Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Alexis Taylor. As the first generation of students to deal with social networking, we see it as our duty to address cyberbullying. Having more specific laws and procedures to report cyberbullying will raise awareness of students and teachers regarding the damage bullying can cause. According to the 2011 Oregon Healthy Teen Survey, 27% of teens reported being harassed in the past 30 days. Senate Bill 1555 provides a long-term legal mandate that is a necessary foundation to our student and teacher efforts to stop bullying. Research demonstrates that school districts with policies have less instances.
Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee, under the law, every student is entitled to learn in a safe environment, and we are passionate about creating this ideal. Senate Bill 1555 would raise awareness and challenge the myth that bullying is just a part of life. We support public postings of anti-bullying laws at our school. We will talk about the stronger law during our Lincoln anti-bullying presentations. Our fellow students' knowledge of the law will be important when we train them how to respond effectively to hateful speech and actions. To close, we would like to share with you written reflection from Lincoln students regarding the effectiveness of using law and education to improve school climate.
I think that it is really great that Lincoln has an anti-bullying program. It makes Lincoln a better place. I've never really been bullied until this year, and it's tough. I didn't know what to do in this situation. I know that I'm not the only one who has experienced this. Now I feel like Lincoln is actually doing something and succeeding. I honestly want to do something to prevent bullying. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, I am Josh Sabby, policy advisor for Senator Verger. I don't have any prepared remarks, so if you have any questions about the mechanics of the bill, I'd be happy to answer any of those.
Okay, committee members have any questions?
Chair members of the committee, Ms. Taylor, students, as it relates to cyberbullying, are you talking about cyberbullying where someone enters something on their computer at home or in school? So
when we do address cyberbullying in our presentations, we do address it in school and in home, at home. So pretty much if you do say something as you're in school on your phone, you text it to somebody, or you do it on a mobile site such as, you know, Facebook or something like that, or Twitter, and it is bullying, then we're addressing that as well as at the home if it affects school climate as well as the student's education.
Mr. Chair. Just on that point, nothing stays at home. A post that is put on by a student sitting in their family room or den at home is instantly all over campus the next morning. And so it permeates the atmosphere at schools.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, members of Nolan, you're 100% correct, but when I look at the definition, takes place on or immediately adjacent to school grounds or any school-sponsored activity or school-provided transportation or any official school bus stop, that seems to limit the action geographically.
It wouldn't cover
the electronic world, as we've seen in many instances lately, has gone beyond the law.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, the statement requires notice for it to include those places, but under the definition of cyberbullying in ORS 339-351, it does state that any of those activities that affect the learning environment are under the school's purview.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I mean, we don't usually hear education bills, it turns out, and so this is not my particular lane of knowledge. I was a prosecutor. But I will connect this, or attempt to, in terms of prosecutorial terms, and for counsel in the committee. When a crime is committed, for instance, a cyber crime, you have basically two areas of jurisdiction. Typically, you have the area in which the person operating the computer was physically seated, and then you have the area in which the effect of the crime occurred. Say you have computer theft. One person sitting in Bend can commit took a case to trial where a person sitting in Bend was stealing from a bank in Grants Pass. We had the trial in Grants Pass, even though the person never set foot there because the bank was located there. And so I think there is some precedent. This is going back to the council's question regarding the geographic reference in apparently ORS 339351. I think there is some precedent in connection to the criminal code. Not that this is a criminal, not that this is a crime, but I'm seeing it. I mean, your thoughts on that, I'd be very interested in, though.
Sure.
Committee members? Representative Warren?
I agree with Representative Hicks, and it's also, I mean, we've already crossed into an analysis of this when we looked at the bullying regulations and statutes. So we have the standard things can happen off campus, but when they come onto campus and affect the learning environment, that's when we say, all right, what was happening elsewhere is now relevant to what's happening in the school environment. And I see this as a very, very similar situation with the same standards would apply.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You know, I can recall back, it's been a while since I was in school at your age, but I got grandkids your age. You hear a little of this type of thing. We actually had a young lady in Gold Beach commit suicide a couple of years ago as a result of bullying. And it has escalated into some, as you say, some really hard words about somebody to demean what they are as a person. And I can't imagine that what type of homes the kids are coming out of, that is allowed to kind of permeate within that family. The family's got to be somewhat aware that some of this is going on, I would think. So it's not only the kids, but the parents of kids have got to be more responsible, and those kids got to be taught certain type of values in the home, things that are acceptable and not acceptable. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else signed up for the bill?
Co-chairs, member of the committee. For several years, Oregon has been at the forefront of ensuring its schools are safe.
Can you give me your name, please?
Sure. I'm Ryan Schwartz. Okay. I represent the Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition. For several years, Oregon has been at the forefront of ensuring its schools are safe places where all students can learn and grow in healthy ways. Yet, in those past few years, national studies have highlighted best practices in bullying prevention that are noticeably absent from our policies. Thank you for considering this amendment, which will once again put Oregon ahead of the curve. The Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition represents over 150 community organizations, school districts, and professional groups that seek to create safe schools and communities where every family can belong, every educator can teach, and every child can learn. We support a network of student clubs where we're able to hear firsthand how school harassment prevents learning from happening, increases absences and dropout rates, and threatens the ability of young people to thrive and succeed. I think you've heard testimony before about the negative impacts of bullying, and you'll probably hear it again. I'm not going to go into that here, but what I do want to talk about are best practices that we know work to prevent bullying. The youth that we work with have created some novel ways to address bullying in their schools, but the onus should not be on them. Our school leaders can be doing more, and this bill creates an easy path for them to follow. I've had the privilege of working across the country in bullying prevention for some time. I've helped create and facilitate workshops and curriculum development for educators, school-based health and mental health professionals, young people, and community groups. In those experiences, a common theme has emerged. School staff want more training to identify and intervene in bullying. A 2011 study from the National Education Association found that 59% of teachers and 68% of other school support staff specifically requested more training to address bullying. This bill would require schools to integrate bullying prevention into already existing professional development. And the Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition is standing by to offer our resources and expertise to help school leaders do that easily and efficiently. Community resources already exist throughout the state to equip Oregon teachers with the know-how to intervene and prevent bullying, and this bill simply asks school districts to utilize what is already available in their communities. Furthermore, it ingrains another best practice in bullying prevention, reporting. Reporting bullying allows school leaders to better understand what is happening on their campus and can help them identify bullying hotspots, such as certain hallways or bathrooms that can benefit from increased adult presence. Mandatory reporting and staff training are routinely among the top five best practices in bullying prevention, and they should be incorporated into our state's policies. Finally, this bill closes a loophole that allows bullying and harassment to poison school environments without redress as long as it happens online. The Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition routinely hears personal stories of Oregon students who are cyberbullied, and it is clear that an increasing number of youth are misusing internet and cell phone technology to bully, harass, and even incite violence against others. The result are that schools are unsafe, hostile, and unsuitable for learning. This bill will untie the hands of teachers and school support staff to address the issues that cyberbullying creates in their schools and classrooms. Federal guidelines, as well as those from the most respected bullying prevention groups, identify all of the provisions in this bill as common best practices to prevent bullying. Passing this bill would catch our bullying prevention efforts up to new guidelines and ensure that we are meeting the intent of the bill that was passed 3 years ago. The Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition is thrilled by the unanimous support this bill received in the Senate, and we urge you to pass it out of committee without delay. Thank you for your time.
Chairs Barker and Krieger and members of the committee, I am Brian Holiski. I come to you today as a certified teacher of 16 years in the Tigard-Tualatin School District and as a board member of the Oregon Safe Schools and Communities Coalition. In the recently published U.S. Department of Education document, State Bullying Laws and Policies, data collected through April of 2011, was used to rate each of the 50 states on their bullying laws and policies. The state of Oregon scores very well overall. However, where the present Oregon Safe Schools Act falls short of national expectations, your passage of HB 1555 can easily restore the present Oregon law to compliance or near compliance with fidelity. The U.S. Department of Education identifies 16 key components that comprise sound and protective bullying laws. Oregon has 14 of those key components in place. Of the two components not in place, one is mental health considerations and the other is transparency and monitoring. The mental health question in regard to bullying laws is the number one missing key component across the nation. Each key component is given a score of 0 to 2. A fully realized state law would receive a score of 32. Oregon received a score of 21. Again, the mental health and transparency prevention components received zeros. However, there are 7 other categories that score only a 1. The majority of these key components have an element of communication embedded in them. This bill, SB 1555, strengthens and clarifies the language of Oregon's existing law. As a teacher, my skill as a reporter of any suspected abuse of my students is a skill I am grateful to have. I know that my fellow educators will welcome any and all guidance in strengthening the understanding that the power of cyberbullying that holds over their students and their communities. Oregon Safe Schools, Communities and Coalitions, and I are happy to give assistance in this endeavor. OSCC was very excited and proud when notified of the unanimous support of this bill that this bill received in the Senate last Wednesday. We urge you to pass SB 1555 out of committee. Thank you for your time.
Committee members, any questions, comments? Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move.
I'll go to the work session on House Bill 1555.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1555 to the floor with a due pass.
Co-Chair Barker moves Senate Bill 1555 to the floor with a due pass. Any comment, objections, questions? If not, we'll go to the floor. We'll need a vote on it though first. Call the roll.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Excuse.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Senate Bill 1555 then does go to the floor. Who would like to carry it? Anyone in particular?
Speaker Rowland's the sponsor of the bill.
We can ask him if he'd like to. If not, we'll have Representative Tomei carry it. Check with him on that.
Absolutely.
Chair.
Yeah.
I move we suspend the rules in order to permit Representative Olson to vote on Senate Bill 1555.
Any objection to the proposal to suspend the rules so Representative Olson can vote? If not, Representative Olson?
Yes.
He votes yes. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1528.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 1528 comes to you from the Senate Judiciary Committee. And what it basically does, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it clarifies the police powers for Oregon Liquor Control Inspectors. This law was originally written probably right after Prohibition. They have inherent police powers as it relates to enforcement of Oregon's liquor laws. What this bill basically does is make it more explicit, update the law, and puts it in those particular statutes that relate to law enforcement policy.
Okay. How about David Green, Steve Ennis Bainbridge, Rick Miller, and Mary Botkin? Can you all get up there at one time?
Mary said she wants to come on. No.
Mr. Chair, Mary Botkin, for the record. I don't need to be up here unless you have questions, so I'll just sit in the back of the room.
That's fine.
Good morning, co-chairs Barker and Krieger and committee members. My name is David Green. I've worked as an inspector for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for about 13 years, and I'm here on behalf of, as a member of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I'm here to testify in support of this bill because I think this bill will improve working conditions for OLCC employees and also make a positive difference for the people of the state of Oregon. I also want to make sure that you know that it passed through the Senate 30-0. What this bill does is it impacts six areas. First of all, it clarifies our enforcement authority. It protects employees while performing their jobs. It reduces our liability for OLCC and for the state of Oregon. It implements a standard certification program. It increases our professionalism, and it protects current career employees by providing a one-time grandfathering to comply with ADA regulations and federal laws. What it doesn't do is, just as importantly, in two areas, it does not expand our authority, and it does not increase any financial compensation or change or enhance retirement benefits for inspectors. How the bill does this is by making some changes to ORS 471775, and how it currently that statute gives OLCC inspectors all the authority given by statute to peace officers of the state. What the bill does is implement changes to that statute by limiting our enforcement in the law that relates specifically to actions related to alcoholic liquor. It also puts us into ORS 161 in chapters 161 and 181. And it does, by doing that, it protects us while we're making arrests and performing our jobs on licensed premises and interacting with the public. What also this bill does is it clarifies and protects us and does so with the requirement that be done so with professionalism and accountability. It requires implementation of a standard certification program, and by this spring, almost 100% of current OLCC inspectors will have completed the approved curriculum through DPSST. OLCC inspectors are committed to this certification and upholding the standards of this certification and continuing to be bound by that certification and accountability. I think it makes a difference for OLCC, its employees, and for the state of Oregon. I'm happy to try and answer any questions that the committee might have. Thank you.
We'll probably have saved the questions till the end.
Okay. Co-chair Barker and Krieger and committee members, my name is Steve Bainbridge. I work as an inspector for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I've held the position for short of 28 years. I've also worked as regional manager and lead inspector in the Portland office.
The question today, quite simply, is why should this bill be brought out of committee and why should it become law? And I just want to touch on six brief points. I'll be rather quick about it, and then we can move on to any questions that you might have. First of all, to correct our existing peace officer status. Our status has not changed since prohibition, and the peace officer authority is contained within the Liquor Control Act, but if you fast forward to today, the legal interpretations have concluded that we have the authority of a peace officer, but we are not a peace officer. OLCC inspectors make arrests, issue citations, and enforce and investigate liquor laws and work closely with police. The statute granting peace officer authority to police and sheriffs needs to include OLCC inspectors. Today, this legal oversight results in district attorneys concluding that we are not true peace officers. This bill corrects this problem and clarifies our authority. Inspectors will continue with their core functions, namely the enforcement of state liquor laws and administrative rules. The second point I wanted to make as to why this should be brought out of committee, it reduces liability and establishes competence. This bill will ensure a professional level of training at the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. New personnel require training regardless. The same amount of training will now be conducted by DPSST. The result is that when properly trained personnel deal with the inevitable problems they will encounter, they will act lawfully. DPSST also trains people to act with competence and professionalism. I believe it's past due to have this requirement for this position. Thirdly, it requires inspectors to adhere to the standards set by DPSST to maintain certification of peace officers. Should an inspector act improperly, DPSST can act quickly to take appropriate administrative action to bar any peace officers from working. If this bill is passed, there will be greater accountability for our personnel who are enforcing the Liquor Control Act. This bill will require a thorough background check, and that's important. That's a fourth point I wanted to make to this group. The same level should be required of all peace officers. This includes fingerprinting, criminal history, background check screening, employment checks, and the like. Currently, the standard is basically that of any state worker. It's not to the level of the peace officer, and this has evolved over time because we've had this great expanse of time and this statute has not been updated. Finally, this bill will permit enhanced legal protection for OLCC inspectors. The bill allows DAs to charge anyone who would assault an inspector in the performance of their duties with assaulting a public safety officer. The DAs will not utilize this statute today, many of them, and the intent of this law is to increase the penalties that deter people from harming peace officers, and I believe inspectors deserve that legal protection. The public in general, they deserve, on issues of public safety, which is an area that inspectors deal with in assisting and serving the public, they deserve better. They deserve for this bill to be passed and out of committee. Thank you very much.
Chairs Barker and Krieger and committee members, my name is Rich Miller. I've been a liquor enforcement officer for 22 years. I don't have any prepared remarks, but I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Committee members, any questions about their testimony? Representative Cossett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's no one here from the Restaurant Association, or they testify in the Senate?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no one testified against this bill in the Senate side.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like the panel to comment. you know, we had a really bad experience in Bend, and you know about that. We had a gentleman that was out, you know, making false arrests, closing businesses down, and he was not even a U.S. citizen. Your systems didn't work. Now, how am I confident that, you know, this bill you're bringing forth, you know, I didn't know anything about this. I haven't been contacted by any advocates of the bill. We had a big problem. It was front page news that probably got some reporters in the bulletin some rewards that they undercovered this guy that had been going in, you know, harassing bartenders, making, you know, fuck, you know, he was closing our businesses down, and he wasn't even a U.S. citizen. He wasn't who he said he was. He took the name of a 3-year-old that died, and so how do I feel comfortable supporting this bill?
Representative, may I address that? I pulled these off the internet last night, and the person, he assumed the name of Jason Evers, and I worked with this gentleman, not knowing that his true name was Deutschen.
You don't understand. I was not lobbied by your group and given a heads up on this bill. It comes. This is the last day of the committee, and I've got to vote on it.
My apologies. I simply did not know that you were not contacted.
Can I have a few minutes to go outside and call Senator Telfer?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll be continuing the hearing while you're doing that.
May I? I was just informed by someone that we had contacted the Restaurant Association, and they didn't have any objections to this.
Mr. Chair, no, I share your concern about that idiot that slipped through the cracks. I don't think anybody in here going to disagree with that. But I worked with the Restaurant Association a long time, Gene, and if that representative, and if, yeah, I know if they were concerned about this bill, they'd be sitting right there at that desk. I don't speak for them, but I would be willing to bet a good amount of money they'd be in the room.
Appreciate that.
And also,
I still like this real
sure,
quickly.
All, if you want to go do that, go ahead. But I am going to have Marilyn Lawrence from BVST come up and talk about what their role might be and how that might keep this type of thing from slipping through. Any other questions to this panel? Okay, thank you very much. Marilyn, can you come up, please?
Thank you, Co-Chair Krieger. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Marilyn Lawrence. I manage the Standards and Certification Program for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And during 2011, the proponents of the bill that's before you today, as Senate Bill 1528, approached our department asking us to help them develop language to bring their liquor enforcement inspectors within our agency's jurisdiction for minimum standards, training, and certification. Section 21 of this bill is based on those discussions, and that language is modeled on the provisions in our current statutes that bring police officers, corrections officers, and parole and probation officers within our minimum standards jurisdiction. The appropriate changes have also been made to our definitions within that section. The bill requires OLCC to pay for the mandated basic training that is developed as required under the bill. There is transition language in Section 28, and our understanding from Legislative Council is that the effect of that language for our agency is that it requires us to have the certification program available by July 1 of 2015 and mandate certification by January 1 of 2017. Based on Section 28, there would be no fiscal impact to our agency in the current biennium. We would begin the process of conducting a job task analysis, and that's the baseline for developing the minimum standards, both medically and then minimum standards for curriculum development that would become the mandated curriculum for liquor enforcement inspectors. We would anticipate about 18 months for that process because there's been no mandated program, there's been no legal analysis by our agency of what would be required. Our fiscal impact statement identifies a 0.75 limited duration FTE to oversee that development process. We anticipate being able to incorporate the minimum standards once they're developed within our standard processes in our agency. So we can speak in generalities to the minimum standards that are in place for other peace officers, and that includes background investigations. Our agency conducts criminal records checks when people are brought into our jurisdiction when they begin employment. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have more specifics.
Committee members?
Briefly looking at this, I think it may actually help address some of my friend's problems. And I just want to put on the record, too, I've gotten calls from a lot of people around the state, and there's two sides to every story. But I think sometimes these officers may not be as gentle as they could be, if you will. And some I get calls about that they're, you know, being kind of pushed around, the bar owners. Maybe they're, now there's two sides to every story. That's all anecdote. But I think it's worthy of just commenting on it so people examine what's going on out there and make sure people are doing what we want them to do and not exercising more authority than we've been giving them, and to be respectful, even when people are out of compliance, still remain respectful. I think that's fair. Thank you, though.
It's professionalism that should be in all of our state agencies. We shouldn't have anyone being arrogant. Public should be treated with respect at all times. There's no other reason. There's no reason not to do that. That doesn't hurt a state policeman like I was, or a liquor inspector, or a wildlife department. Someone had a question here. Murray, you wouldn't have anything to say, would you?
We've worked really hard with committee counsel and some of the other representatives and senators to get the bill to say what we needed to say, which is just to clarify and update the current laws so that they meet current needs of the agency and the individuals who are responsible for enforcing liquor laws. We are painfully aware of the problems that occurred in Bend, and the agency and the employees took action to do what they could to correct those problems, and it is our hope as their union representatives that this will bring a level of professionalism to the employees that is needed and will provide for some consistency statewide so that folks everywhere get treated with dignity and respect, and that dignity and respect is exchanged with the employees who are doing the job. You know, there are always unfortunate incidences. The Jason Evers issue was shocking to us as a union, and we supported the agency in their swift and sure action once that was uncovered. It is our hope that by going through DPSST, that issue will never again raise its head. You know, with a more thorough background check at hiring, it is hoped that the Jason Evers issue never would have arisen. And, you know, it's not very often that any of you see me up here testifying in favor of doing more background checks and deeper background checks, but we are supporting that at this point, and we have the support of our members to do that. Everybody feels like it is past time. And as committee counsel indicated, these laws have not been updated since Prohibition, and times have changed. The industry has changed. And we try to work with our industry as much as we can to make sure that they're getting what they expect and that we're getting what we need to do done.
Okay, Representative Hicks, you had a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And thank you, Ms. Botkin, for jumping into the hot seat at my heated insistence. I know you're a seasoned professional, and so...
Better that I be here than our members.
Well, it is. But this is a question, really, I think only you could probably answer. So maybe it's too early in the morning or too late in the month for me to try and mince words, but because the lobby effort on this has been thin at best, this is my only chance to ask direct types of questions. Okay, so it's no secret that OLCC, since what happened up in Washington State, since Washington State did away with its Liquor Control Commission, has been considering or under consideration in terms of what would happen, how that would look if that happened in Oregon. And it's also no secret that the Restaurant Association, the grocers, have expressed curiosity, to put it mildly, about how that would play out here on this side of the border. You know, so it's interesting that right at that moment, for the first time since 1933, now we quickly need to cut the inspector division, which in theory maybe, maybe not, would survive that type of referendum, Washington State type of referendum, without this change. But, I mean, I'm asking you here, this is going to affect whether they continue on. This is kind of an impact, isn't it? Let's say Oregon passes a Washington type measure, goes away with the OLCC. I mean, these guys, bless them, they do great work. They're going to be in jeopardy if that happens. If we switch them over to peace officer status, that situation is different.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, I actually don't think so.
Okay. Why?
Well, first of all, we've already privatized our system. So we don't have, we haven't had a Washington's type system for 20 years. All of our retail sales are private owners now, and that was something Washington had not done. And so, you know, we sort of modernized that distribution system some 20 years ago and got rid of the old green fronts and went to private operators and private stores then. So I think that the system generally is different here, by nature of what's already happened. And we are actually in ongoing conversations with the grocery lobby and the restaurant lobby to talk about ways that the system can meet their needs and continue to be monitored for appropriate and proper consumption, and you know, there's always a fine line with, especially with alcohol, it is a legal drug, and so there's a fine line between responsible consumption and controlling that consumption and making sure that people who are responsible consumers have access while those who would overconsume are held accountable. That is a challenge for everybody who is involved in the system, and it is a challenge to find that balance. And the men and women who do the enforcement for the state of Oregon struggle with that challenge every day. And, you know, my attitude is more training will only help. Better clarification of the laws can only make it better. And the accountability level will go up, both for the inspectors and for those who service. So,
I want to get back to the content of what the bill does, not about privatizing or not. That's a separate issue that we'll have to deal with at some time. Representative Wisnett, you have one more question?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll just go ahead. I think, hope you have the votes to pass it. I'll vote no and ask that OLCC kindly request OLCC and DPSST contact me before this goes to the floor so I can hopefully vote yes on the floor. I was not able to meet Senator Telfer. You know, Mr. Evans was finally removed because he wasn't who he said he was, and he was here illegally, but he was also moved because of the performance of his duties by the OLCC because he was abusing his position. So I'd like to have some further conversation with the two agencies. I hope you have, because I asked the chairs if we could carry it over, and that's not a possibility. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just want to reemphasize, originally when the law passed, OLCC was given a general grant of authority to enforce liquor laws. What this bill does is go through the statutes, every place where it mentions law enforcement, they are included where it's appropriate, and their powers are limited just to enforcement of liquor laws. They can't go out and start enforcing our drug laws, anything like that.
Question, Mr. Taylor, Mr. Chairs. But it says they're going to be arresting people now.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for liquor laws, they can probably do that now. Now, what the problem they have had as it relates to specific statutes and specific district attorney's offices, they sometimes feel uncomfortable in this area because they're not specifically mentioned in that statute. But when you go back to the OLCC law, they do have enforcement powers. You know, one of the great interesting things about Oregon legislative history, and that is we have a lot of history at the time of statehood, okay? After that, we have nothing because the records went home with the committee chairs. It was only back in the 70s that we started archiving committee records. So I really can't go back to the 30s and give you specific conversations and discussions. And
I thought you were here.
No, maybe both of us were here. I'm not sure. So, I mean, that's one of the things you labor on. But that's typically how they drafted legislation at that time, general grants of authority. This makes it specific in particular statutes.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Barker.
Just briefly, I would assume also by putting this under DPSST, a person like the guy up in Bend would say, I better not apply for that job because this is going to have a really tight background check by making a law enforcement position. So I think that would, it eases my mind as to something like that happening again. Thank
It'd
you.
It'd be interesting to know if you found out he wasn't a citizen, what are they going to do about it?
Mr. Chair, I do have to offer my apology to Representative Wisnett. I have talked to him a bazillion times this session, and I cannot believe that we have not talked about this. And I just have to accept responsibility for that and offer my both professional and personal apologies to the good representative.
I think he was on Ralph Groner's list of contacts, what I heard.
Yeah, I don't know. I am deeply embarrassed, and you know, no lobbyist wants to be called into account for thin lobbying. That certainly is not something I've ever been accused of before. And I have been accused of over-lobbying. And again, I want to offer my apologies to the good representative, and we will come by and have a conversation with you in depth about the need for the bill. And again, I apologize.
Bud Light, Miller Light.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the how this works, I can understand an OLCC official not feeling comfortable actually arresting someone if it's not clear in statute and we need it. So, but in real life, out in the real life world, if an official is going to make an arrest, there's someone out of compliance, it needs to be arrested for whatever they're out of compliance. Would they call a sheriff and say, would you please come with me in case things get out of hand? Is that how it works in the real world? I see heads nodding yes. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, committee members?
Yeah. Hicks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yeah, I do. I'm still unresolved. And again, you know, the privatization, I oppose privatization. I'm fine with, I mean, they're hardworking individuals, and we need to keep them. So, but there are many unanswered questions. So I will, rather than let my colleague from Sun River stand out there on his own, I'm going to stand with him and remain open-minded on this bill. But today, I'm going to flag it along with him with a no vote.
Anything further? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1528 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1528A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1528A to the floor if it do pass.
Co-Chair Barker has moved Senate Bill 1528A to the floor if it do pass. Any further discussion? Objections? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan? Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shopler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Wisnet?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Nope.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Senate Bill 1528A has passed and will go to the floor. And who would like to carry it? Anyone in particular?
I'll take it.
Want to carry it?
Sure.
Representative Barker will be the carrier. The last bill we've got today is Senate Bill 1528. Open a work session. 27 on that bill, please. Work session.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 1527 comes to you from the Senate Judiciary Committee. You may remember at our last meeting we added the A6 amendments to the bill to address the issue of changing the amount, decoupling the fine amount from misdemeanor amount when it's reduced to an infraction. The original bill made some technical changes to the strangulation statute, replacing conviction with the word crime in the statute. Okay. Mr. Chairman of the committee, we have all the paperwork. We got it 5 minutes after our last meeting.
And it does not need to go to Ways and
Means? That does not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1527A to the floor with a due pass.
Co-Chair Barker has moved Senate Bill 1527A to the floor with a due pass. Any further discussion? Not, call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative
Olson? Aye.
Representative
Shopler? Aye.
Representative
Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Wisnet?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Senate Bill 1527A does pass the floor. Representative Tomei, you've done something on strangling before. Would you like to carry this, please?
For Representative Gelser. Does she know? I don't know. She may want to.
Yeah, she together with her, but let you all know.
Okay. She was not the sponsor.
No,
it was a testicle thing.
She wasn't. Yeah.
She does have an interest in the area, so she was sponsored the bill last session.
Right.
Yeah. I think, committee, this is the last bill we may have unless the co-speakers decide they want to throw something at us real quick to get it done. So I thank you for all being here again.
So no Monday meeting right now, but we have 24 hours you can schedule Monday.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything coming up, do we?
Mr. Chairman, I was committed. I'd like to hear it at 10 o'clock Saturday just in case.
The last bill.
Did we get another class photo?
Yeah. Depends on what hole I'm on, I could be here.
We'll close the committee. Thank you.